country, more like fair-sized villages in the neighbourhood of Moscow than towns. They are usually well provided with police officers, superintendents, and minor officials of all sorts. A post in Siberia is usually a snug berth in spite of the cold. The inhabitants are simple folk and not of liberal views. Everything goes on according to the old-fashioned, solid, time-honoured traditions. The officials, who may fairly be said to be the aristocracy of Siberia, are either born and bred in Siberia or men who have come from Russia, usually from Petersburg or Moscow, attracted by the extra pay, the double travelling expenses, and alluring hopes for the future. Those of them who are clever at solving the problem of existence almost always remain in Siberia and eagerly take root there. Later on, they bring forth sweet and abundant fruit. But others of more levity and no capacity for solving the problems of existence soon weary of Siberia and wonder regretfully why they came. They wait with impatience for the end of their 3 years' term of office, and instantly on the expiration of it, petition to be transferred and return home, abusing Siberia and sneering at it. They are wrong. Not only from the official standpoint, but from many others, one may find a blissful existence in Siberia. The climate is excellent. There are many extremely wealthy and hospitable merchants, many exceedingly well-to-do natives. Young ladies bloom like roses and are moral to the last extreme. The wild game birds fly about the streets and positively thrust themselves upon the sportsmen. The amount of champagne consumed is supernatural. The caviar is marvellous. In some parts, the crops often yield 15-fold. In fact, it is a blessed land. One need only know how to reap the benefits of it. In Siberia, people do know. In one of these lively, self-satisfied little towns with the most charming inhabitants, the memory of whom is imprinted forever on my heart, I met Alexander Petrovich Goryanchikov, a man who had been a gentleman and landowner born in Russia, had afterwards become a convict in the 2nd Division for the murder of his wife, and on the expiration of his 10 years' sentence was spending the rest of his life humbly and quietly as a settler in the town. Although he was officially described as an inhabitant of a neighbouring village, he did actually live in the town, as he was able to earn some sort of a living there by giving lessons to children. In Siberian towns, one often meets teachers who have been convicts. They are not looked down upon. They are principally employed in teaching French, of which, in the remote parts of Siberia, the inhabitants would have no notion, were it not for them, though the language is so indispensable for success in life. The first time I met Alexander Petrovich was in the house of Ivan Ivanich Gvozdikov, an old-fashioned and hospitable official who had gained honours in the service and had 5 very promising daughters of various ages. Alexander Petrovich gave them lessons 4 times a week for 30 kopecks a lesson. His appearance interested me. He was an exceedingly pale, thin man, small and frail-looking, who could hardly be called old, about 35. He was always very neatly dressed in European style. If one talked to him, he looked at one very fixedly and intently, listened with strict courtesy to every word one uttered, as though reflecting upon it, as though one had asked him a riddle or were trying to worm out a secret, and in the end answered clearly and briefly, but so weighing every word that it made one feel ill at ease, and one was relieved at last when the conversation dropped. I questioned Ivan Ivanich about him at the time, and learned that Goryanchikov was a man who led an irreproachably moral life, and that otherwise Ivan Ivanich would not have engaged him for his daughters, but that he was dreadfully unsociable and avoided everyone, that he was extremely learned, read a great deal but spoke very little, and in fact it was rather difficult to talk to him, that some people declared that he was positively mad, though they considered that this was not a failing of much importance, that many of the most respected persons in the town were ready to be kind to Alexander Petrovich in all sorts of ways, that he might be of use, indeed, writing petitions and so forth. It was supposed that he must have decent relations in Russia, possibly people of good position, but it was known that from the time of his conviction he had resolutely cut off all communication with them. In fact, he was his own enemy. Moreover, everyone in the town knew his story, knew that he had killed his wife in the 1st year of his marriage, had killed her from jealousy.